Russ Dax, good morning. Yeah, hello.
Hi, good morning, Dennis.
Hey, it is.
Greetings. How are you?
Hey, I'm all right. I'm all right.
Yes, you know, I don't call in too often, but just a couple of points I want to raise. I heard a bit about the COVID issue. I want, though, to say that I want to give kudos to the minister and his team for the hard, diligent work being done in keeping this virus contained. I have, however, concern about a crack in the self-quarantining issue. Now, the section with the self-quarantine, to me, is an area that has to be looked at because there have been instances. In fact, in relation to this cluster, I think the original person was self-quarantining and unknown to the person that was helping. That's how it got away. That is called slipping through the crack. I believe the self-quarantine aspect is not monitored enough. Because I know there are some people who came in from another Caribbean island and are supposed to be self-quarantined, but are out at bars and having a good time.
Mm. It depends on if you explain the rationale behind the self-quarantine period, if you have safeguards in place, yes. But if you leave it to individuals to discipline themselves, you can be disappointed. You can be disappointed.
Very much so. That is the point that I'm making. That is an area that needs to be tightened. I'm not sure it's going to be tightened, but then you have to rely on the person's integrity or discipline to determine if they will stay in place and not go out and have a good time as they were here to do. I mean, that crack has to be sealed, or are we going to find some other people passing through that crack?
Yeah, I can't disagree with you, sir. If left to their own devices, people will sometimes be irresponsible. Let me put it that way. So, yeah. The self-quarantining has always been a question mark for me too, sir.
Yeah. Well, I was wondering too if we need to be recording the imported cases. In other words, the cases that have actually come from aircraft after the airports open. I wonder if those should be added on to our tally because technically they are not local, inverted commas.
Yeah, but they're here.
So you have to add them on. So it looks like if Barbados is growing in numbers with this virus, and in fact, we only had about 80-something.
No, not really. You see, it depends on what, how it's recorded and why it's recorded the way it's recorded. For example, I've often questioned, just in my mind, if someone is in transit and we note here that they are infected and we take them off and we isolate them. This is someone who was not destined to be in Barbados. This is someone who was going somewhere else. But we've isolated them and we're responsible and we're paying for their isolation while they're here. At least until I'm told otherwise, I presume that's what it is. At the end of their period of isolation, what happens? And let me ask you why I'm asking what happens. Let's say I left Trinidad and I'm in transit to, I don't know, New York.
Yeah.
And the plane stops in Barbados. I get off the plane in Barbados. I'm going to New York for a 10-day stay with my family there. I'm quarantined in Barbados for over 10 days. The ticket that I had said Port of Spain, New York, Port of Spain. They don't say anything about Barbados.
Yeah.
So what do I do at the end of my isolation? Do I buy a ticket to go back to Trinidad that says Trinidadians can't come in right now? And then do I sit down in Barbados where? In a hotel paying money from where?
From where?
I was going to my family in New York, so I didn't really walk with $15,000. Yeah. So you end up, there are these areas of gray that I don't know what happens.
They exist,
but I just don't know what happens.
Very difficult to manage. There are so many variables and so many parameters. Mm-hmm. But we can only try. If I move from there, I want to go to the dengue. You notice that I'm hearing an increased number of dengue cases. But I want to draw attention to the fact that we have thousands of derelict vehicles in this country. I don't know what is the formula for getting rid of them, how it could be done, but these vehicles store water. And so mosquitoes have a very good ground to increase their numbers. You have the rats and any other vermin, centipedes and so on that accumulate around and inside these vehicles. I mean, sometimes they're alongside the road, that if it is a small road and a fire engine had to pass to save a life, the fire engine cannot pass because you have these unused, derelict, broken-down vehicles next to the road, in the bush, and next to houses and all sorts of places, and I don't know how it can be dealt with. I thought they had started, but I don't know if you can enlighten me if somebody could create some area where they could go and crush them, carry them, and make some money from the metal. I have no idea.
That has been an ongoing issue, sir. We've had attempts to control the abandoning of vehicles. One, there are people who actually accumulate all the vehicles to use the parts to take off a door here, a roof there. Metal men like to create, and they're very creative with it. There's a metal man in somewhere out by the Vaucluse area. There are attempts by bees, I think, at one point to have a crusher. It still exists somewhere, I think. There is money in scrap. Unfortunately, there is also abandoned vehicles all over the place, and with the advent of rain, water will accumulate in it, and tires too. Yeah. Another big issue. Great accumulator of water, great place for mosquitoes to lay their eggs and wait on fresh water.
Have a wonderful time.
Oh, yeah. They
want to keep down. Yeah, man, if you want to keep the dengue down, because I was hearing an article saying that every 4 to 5 years, you get an outbreak. Mm-hmm. And ours is due near the end of this year or next year, if that cycle is correct. Mm-hmm. So if we want to not have dengue in the midst of COVID, something needs to be done to work on these vehicles. I'm not an expert in that area, so I can't say how that can be done. I want to move to CXC very briefly, just to say that I haven't heard anything about their being hacked, because when you're doing anything online, you are hackable. To use that word.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Cybersecurity is of the utmost importance when we are in a situation where so many things have to be online. And if your firewalls are not good, you're going to get in trouble. Because if you can have a person doing the exam and then BMR absent, and then you have people getting a grade that doesn't exist, and all the other funny things that took place, I believe they have to look to see behind the firewall if they got hacked or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how it's being resolved, but it needs, you know, you have a lot of children suffering and teachers, people who want to go to university, etc. But of more importance to me, I heard that first exchange with the registrar speaking to members of several countries, and he was talking down to them. He sounded very pompous, as if he was a law unto himself, and he knew everything was going on. and his English was very poor for a person of that status. I thought he couldn't conjugate properly at all. I don't know how these things work, but I hope they can get it sorted out and hacked. I don't know. I'm sure the unions are representing properly.
I am sure too, sir. Thanks for your contribution. 434-1790, Brass Tacks, good morning. Hey, hello. What's up,
hi,
message?
Good morning.
Yeah, hey.
How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Good. I was, somehow I woke up this morning, and a number of ideas came to me. And I was thinking about calling in, and then I was changing my mind. And then I said, yes, I should do it. I believe I should do it because it's a matter that, it's one of those matters that I really think about and I've been involved in for years, somebody who studied history, politics, and been involved in politics. And I thought I needed to share some of my views on this matter. And I'm talking about unionism. And just let me briefly state that in the early days of unionism, the union and the political party were almost as one because they had a common enemy. The enemy being the plantation class. That was when sugar was king. And they therefore spoke as if with one voice because the ordinary folks had, as they said before, somebody against whom they should fight. Now let me fast forward to the modern era, starting from the 1990s, and the influence of the international powers, particularly the IMF. And you recall the impact of the IMF in 1991, when Sir Lloyd Erskine Sandiford had options, and none of them were really good options, in order to satisfy the IMF, which is a big world agency. And they were pressuring him to devalue the dollar, and he resisted. And the next option was to lay off 4,000 people and to cut the wages of people, which Sandiford reluctantly, because nobody would want to do that. And that resulted marching in the streets and a whole lot of chaos. And I'm making the point that at that time, I think Sir Roy Troutman, as he is now, he resigned from the Democratic Labour Party, having marched in the street against the 8% cut, because he did not see it appropriate to remain as a member of the Democratic Labour Party when the Democratic Labour Party leader had imposed those measures, which, although they may have been necessary, were anti-labour. He could not deal with it, and he became an independent, and he did not run for politics after that. I also know that Owen Arthur was very concerned about the influence of the international agencies. He mentioned it in his budget presentation in 2004. And he kept talking about the impact of the international agencies, the things about trading. And these small developing countries were faced with a situation in which some anti-labor measures had to be put in place. Otherwise, you could not get the benefits that you once got. Of course, when you were a colony, you were getting benefits from the colonial powers. Mm-hmm. When you went by yourself, you were now in the open world, and you were suffering in an age where these international players, fighting among themselves, were squeezing these small developing countries.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened in 1993, there was a development, there was a they decided to, we have to fight these external powers. So a subcommittee of the Social Partnership was established. Let me explain that. That meant that Labour, this was represented by C2SAB, this was an amalgam of the various trade unions, BWU, BSTU, BUT, and so on. With the Barbados Workers Union, being the biggest one and being the biggest player. And UPW was also in there. And then there was the private sector agency, comprising all the private sector bodies, like BAS, BHDA, Chamber of Commerce, and a few others. And then there was the government, usually represented by the person responsible for labor or industry, or whatever, there were different people who chaired these sessions. And these sessions were usually held at the workers' union. so that they could come to an amicable arrangement as to how to solve these matters instead of cursing one another in public or instead of fighting, but they didn't have power in Parliament at that time. And it was, and therefore, Sir Roy, as I remember, because I sat in that committee as well, representing the private sector, when it was then the executive director of the BMA. And Sir Roy, he was a big fish, speaking very big and very forceful in that social, in that arrangement, because you can more speak within those walls than you can speak in Parliament. And I want to make the point about Parliament as well, because it was a backbencher. And backbenchers have little power in Parliament. I want to make that very clear. And most of the times, you are successful because of your past life or lives, you might know people who can help you to do things for your constituents. That was my experience. Usually when you ask a minister, they usually had no time for you. They were only concerned about their constituents. So you, as a backbencher, had to find other ingenious ways, as other people have to do in other situations.
To be heard?
Not to be heard, to get things done.
To get it done, okay.
To get things done, because it's not only about talking about getting things done.
Yeah.
To get a playing field, you have to beg somebody that you know. To get a job for somebody who needs one urgently, you find somebody you know, whether in the private sector, and things like that. And there was one minister who I was still very cooperative in my time, George Spain. I never forgot that. He usually had an ear for the backbenchers, and we got a number of things done. So I'm saying the role of a backbencher is really a hard one. But if you are a minister, you are in a very precarious position, because you might have a position that you want to make, but the cabinet does not agree. And you are bound by the rules which relate to collective responsibility. And you can't go out there and say anything, otherwise you are liable to lose your pick as a minister. You might even find yourself before the National Council of the Barbados Labour Party. In this case, because you are bringing the party
into disrepute.
You will remember the case with Dr. Maria Agard. I don't know what disrepute there was, but the case was brought against her that she held the party in disrepute. And I think when I spoke about it, I don't want to repeat him, but I'm just giving the history of it. And because she had a little tete-a-tete with her branch, and she spoke to the press, and it was construed as bringing the party into disrepute. But when she was in charge, you can interpret the rules as you like, and the willing followers will comply, and they will say nothing. And if you happen to be on the other side, they will hang you at the behest of the leader. So, if you are about benching likewise, and you go and talk against your party, anything they don't like, you may be subject to dismissal from the party.
The party. You see,
right, so
but
I'm just putting that in the framework. No, I'm dealing with that because I've seen these things. I know these things. I think I'm not hearing people discuss these things dispassionately.
Because,
come on.
Let me say this to you. As someone who you've just admitted have sat in the corridors of power, you've sat at more than one table, you would well know that political positions and political followers seldom ever discuss anything dispassionately. If they did, we would not have the kind of confusion that we have in politics. Look, so I'll tell you why I say this. I've often said openly on air that I have a disdain for party politics, and people choose to interpret that anyway. I remember listening to a budget presentation in Trinidad. The then Prime Minister in Trinidad, Eric Williams, was supposedly deaf and wore a hearing aid. So after presenting the budget, and the leader of the opposition was responding, Eric Williams sat down and removed his hearing aid from his ear and was reading the newspaper. The leader of the opposition said to the speaker, "The Prime Minister has no respect for the people of Trinidad, because here I am putting a case for the people of Trinidad and Tobago, and he's sitting down there with his hearing aid out, reading the newspapers." And Eric said into the microphone, "I don't have to listen to you. I have some attack dogs. I just say, sick 'em, Bunny, sick 'em, George, and they can take care of you." Bunny was Overran Padmore, a deputy prime minister. George was George Chambers, the other one. The man called them dogs, attack dogs, and say, sick 'em. And they ponging the table and laughing.
You know,
right? So when you talking about dispassionately, man, come on. Yes, sir.
Listen to me, right? Time, right?
Listen to you.
Maybe it can operate that way, but when we are in a crisis situation, which we really have been since the early 1990s, because of the influence of the world powers which have pressed down on these small countries, we have to find ingenious ways of dealing with it and stop all of this clap-trap and this nonsense that I'm hearing and seeing. You know,
it plays to the gallery, sir.
Huh?
It plays to the gallery.
It's comedy. I think they should go and write movies and try and earn some foreign exchange. We need foreign exchange from the creative industry.
Yeah, true, we do. And trust me, some of them would make some very good movies. It's just that it might be too obvious who we're talking about.
Industry. I write some books, too.
I agree with that. I agree with that one. That one I would do on. I'm not too keen on the movies, but I write the book.
You don't write anything, you know. Right now, I'm trying to get some of my friends to write books because they have a lot to share. Some of them have done a lot, and I'm trying to encourage them to document it for the benefit of the youngsters.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Some of them have complied, and really, right now, I'm assisting some of them to make sure they get their work out there for the public, that people can learn from their experiences.
Yeah. Yeah, I back you up with that.
So this guy has so much experience. When you read about all the things he's done, it is amazing. But people they need to have it in front of them.
But let me also say this to you. Why it's important that you encourage almost anyone who has a story to tell it, even if you have to guide them in the way in which they tell it. People who drive voters to polling stations, people who work behind the scenes in campaigns, they would know things that the average voter or the average, well, even sometimes the parliamentary representative wouldn't know. They would have to depend on them for information. So they would have stories to tell that nobody would know.
Dennis, a lady came to me. She wanted me to help her write a book. She's a person who might be considered an ordinary person. Mm-hmm. But she had been wrong, and she said she had a story to tell.
Right.
And she wants help in recording it. I salute her for that. I'm not giving anybody's names, but you will soon probably see it out there.
Right.
But
that's good.
Get serious.
That's good. We have to. So we have to. Look, when...
But don't get so serious that you're cutting everybody's throat.
Correct.
Nice,
correct.
Serious.
Correct.
A laugh, and then do your work in between.
I am glad you took the chance to do it, sir, and I'm glad you're still going to encourage people around you to document the stories. Look, when Owen Arthur passed away, one of the first people I thought about reaching out to for a story was the B-man, because I would see Mr. Arthur over there regularly. Of course, he was still grieving and he didn't want to talk. But eventually, he spoke to the newspaper and they did a story.
Yeah, now, I saw that story, yeah.
Right. Now, he
should write something.
Exactly. Because he would have more background information than a lot of people may have sat around the parliamentary table with Mr. Arthur. Because of the level at which they engaged. The other person is John Williams. I mean, almost every time I saw Mr. Arthur outside the parliament, I saw John Williams. I thought they were inseparable at one point.
So
he must know, you know, whether he tells the stories or not is another thing, but he must know things about the man, the way he felt about certain things. Because here's the other thing, in politics, a lot of times, persons at the head of political parties trust those outside of their cabinet and outside of their parliamentary colleagues more than they trust those inside, you know.
That's
That's
Sir Lloyd Erskine Sandiford said at one point, "Lord, show me my friends, my enemies I could take care of." That's when he was in his, I suppose, darkest moment. But it was an enlightening statement.
Yeah.
You know, and so, so it's a fact.
Let me share something with you, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be too public about it because I don't want to preempt things. But I've been calling the wrong people to try to get information on Owen Arthur so that it can be documented as well in another book, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I've written the book Prime Ministers of Barbados, which features Owen and all the others. But I felt a standalone book with Owen Arthur was very important. So I called all of these, a lot of key people close to him, and tried to get them to make comments and give ideas and things for your book.
Mm-hmm.
A number of them have been cooperative. Others, as usual in Barbadian style, would tell you, yes, they're going to do it. Maybe you would call them a number of times, mm-hmm. and they still would not deliver. And they're not conscious of anything that has your time limit. Mm-hmm. When Arthur's birthday is October the 17th.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it would have been a good thing to have a book which deals with him coming out by his birthday.
Fair enough.
So that was the deadline, okay? I'm saying that some of them didn't cooperate, but for those who have cooperated, then they will know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
They have been given the tribute in a book which I have written.
Mm-hmm.
It is not available in hard copy in Barbados yet. I don't have one in my hand. They're going to take about a month or three weeks to get here.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, I can say the book will be is available on Amazon already. Okay. A book called Owen Arthur. You make me talk so much, you know.
That's all right. That's what I am here to do, to get people to talk. Or else I'll talk to myself all day.
You write all about Owen Arthur against the odds. That book is available on Amazon already.
You can charge it for the ad.
Because people around the world can get it. They have to order it. It's $16 less online. And the thing, but...
I can send for a party.
But look, it's not being launched. I don't want to launch it yet.
But, and I let you spill the beans. All right.
Huh?
And I let you spill the beans. Let me say this again. I think it is vital. Let me move from important to vital now.
Yeah.
I think it is vital that we have these types of publications, whether we agree with the author or not, whether we agree with the sentiments or not. The important thing for me is that people have said, look, this is the person I interacted with. This is the research I've done. This is what I've concluded. For example, the month of October is always a difficult one for me because the month of October is the implosion of the experiment in Grenada known as the People's Revolutionary Government.
Yeah.
Every time I read the international publications and stories, I shake my head. Because there's this emphasis on Marxists and more Marxists and less Marxists. And, you know, the one that makes me smile all the time is when people talk about the intervention of Governor General Sir Paul Scoon in asking the United States and the Caribbean to rescue the people of Grenada. Now, when I see that repeated in the newspapers or in stories, I smile because Sir Paul Scoon himself wrote a book. And in his book, he said, I was isolated in Government House. My communication was cut off. How was I going to invite anybody in? The letter that they asked me to sign was when they took me out of Government House. Those who were already there as part of the, you could call it, whether you call it the invasion or whether you call it the rescue mission. But the first time I saw the letter inviting these people in was after they came and took me out. Now, this is the man who was the Governor General who wrote this. Now, you tell me that nobody is going to read that account and counter what was put out into the public domain about him inviting people in? Well, he's the man who supposedly invited them. So if he wrote a book, should you not balance what he said with what has been printed before? And that's why it's important to hear everybody's side of it so that you could arrive at a conclusion on your own as to where the truth is.
Yes.
It may be on either side.
Yeah, so you talk to everybody who's wrong, whether they're big.
Correct. Whether they're big, small, A, B, C, D, or F. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you get it. And then the young persons who want to find out about whatever happened at that time can then read and hopefully come to a conclusion.
Right, because that's what it's about.
To me, yes. To me. Yeah.
That's what it's about.
Absolutely. Thank you, my friend. Good hearing you. Uh-huh. 4341790. I have a note here saying that there's a burst made in Connell Road, Freehill, Blackrock, flowing from after 5 o'clock this morning. The road has now become Connell River Road in Freehill, Blackrock. Please make note, Barbados Water Authority. Bastax, good morning. Hello. 4341790. Brass Tax, good morning. Let me share this one with you while we wait on the phone lines to come back to me. Person says, today, I and other persons in my gap have not had their garbage collected because the driver couldn't get the truck into the gap and apparently got annoyed and continued on with the rest of the neighborhood. This driver would have to be newly assigned because the other drivers, or the other driver, seem not to have a problem getting in and out of this gap. So we, in this one gap, have not had our garbage collected today because of this. Other times, the men would come into the gap, collect the garbage, take it out of the truck. Now we have to wait until next week and hope it will be picked up. There has been another driver who successfully gets the truck in and out of this gap. It's ridiculous that the guys got frustrated and the driver didn't have the skills to get the truck in, and they decided they were not going to walk into the gap either. And this short message said, water is flowing in Government Hill too. I guess it's not rainwater either. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Dennis Johnson.
Yes,
Mr. Dennis Johnson.
Yes, ma'am.
My voice is a bit low, and my hands are weak, so it's kind of like difficult to keep my hands up and my phone up, but I'll try. First, I want to say that I'd like to say thanks to a gentleman yesterday who came on after I was on the radio, and I heard him say something like, all these things that government are doing and can't sell this lady's case. No, he doesn't know, I don't know him, but he doesn't know what, just those two words, what it meant to me. It might feel like if somebody had hurt me. You understand?
Yes, ma'am.
I felt like somebody has hurt me. And last night was the first time I slept for a long, long time. There's this tight band right under my breast, right across from one side to the other. And when I cry, Mr. Dennis Johnson, it just, the tears don't come out. I feel like I am choking.
Ma'am, I've listened to your plight over the years that I've sat in either chair. And I think I have a fair understanding of the challenges you face. I think it is unfortunate that there are not other avenues open to you for the type of assistance and support and peace of mind that you need other than call-in radio. And I feel a particular weight because other than allowing you to, and let me use the term bleed, not in its real sense, but in a figurative sense, to bleed on radio is the only outlet you seem to have. It may temporarily bring you relief because you've gotten it off your chest, but it does not seem to provide long-lasting relief. And I would like to appeal publicly to those who have your best interest at heart, those who are close to you for whatever reason, either through biological connections or emotional connections, to try to assist you as much as possible in your endeavors to try to find peace of mind, first of all, and relief from the pain and anguish you've shared with us over the years. I think it is unfortunate that so much of your private and personal challenges have been aired both on radio and in the newspaper. And the best that can happen is that persons can go on one side or the other and say you should, or, you know, the authorities need to do something. I really hope that this appeal reaches the ears of those who can be of assistance to you, because it is painful to hear it. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
I am all right, sir. And you?
Okay, fine. Mr. Callender's contribution brought me out, actually.
Okay.
I am at a loss at what the point he was trying to make. I only get a sense of direction when he ended up speaking about his book, his upcoming book. But all the other about the trade union movement and all that sort of thing, I don't think he made a point. What was his real point about the trade union movement? I don't really get it. Now, I remember he saying things about before in the early piece, they had the trade union movement and the unionists had a common enemy. Would it be like former the pantocracy, mm-hmm. for lack of a better word?
Mm-hmm.
It
was.
Right. Then he moved on to say that in the 90s, in the era with Mr. Sandiford, it was the IMF. I don't understand. What's the point? He's trying to say in there that, I don't know, because I don't think he really said it, if he was talking about the new general secretary, the current general secretary, going into parliament and the statement that, you know, in the parliament, you'll be able to make changes, to bring changes. I don't think he said it, but I sort of believe that he was trying to get there, but he didn't.
Maybe he wasn't trying to get there.
He wasn't?
I'd say maybe he wasn't. I didn't say so. So I can't tell you why caller's doing anything, you know. I can't tell you why you're making the comment. I just listen.
He was basically slamming. He was basically saying, well, look, ain't no point in going in parliament. And he said, well, if you're not a minister in the parliament, you can't do anything.
You don't get things done from the backbench, yeah.
You can get things done from the backbench.
That's what you said, yeah.
You can. Yes, you can. Now, he also said, Frank Walker wasn't a minister. Leroy Trotman wasn't a minister. Bobby Morris wasn't a minister. So what's his point? I don't understand what he was saying. He was all rambling.
Okay, sir. Mm-hmm. All right. So his discourse did not reach you. I think sometimes, rather than trying to find out if there is something behind the conversation, if there's a reason for the information, to just take the information as it was given. Here's a gentleman who sat on the back benches of Parliament. Here's a gentleman who ran for elections, was successful and was unsuccessful. Here's a gentleman who's put on the table his perspective of what has been his experience. He also spoke about sitting as a member of the private sector and the institution of the social partnership. That was it. I didn't try to see if there was a message behind the message, if it was a reference to the current situation, current holders of office. It was just a comment. There have been backbenchers who have complained over the years that they haven't been able to get things done. There are people who claim that they have to beg. Some of them do it publicly. For example, during the estimates debate, a backbencher may get up and say, Mr. Speaker, I rise to support this resolution before the Honorable House, and I thank the people of East-West Corridor for giving me the opportunity to speak on their behalf. I would hope that now that we have seen an increase in taxes and the ministers talked about roadworks, some will be done in ABC Avenue, and that is the man speaking on behalf of his constituents on the backbench in the hope that putting it publicly into the atmosphere that when his constituents call on him, he could say, well, I asked him in public out loud, you hear me? I asked him for a little gravy to fall my way. So that's called politics. And it's been practiced that way since I've been in short pants. I know why we just pretend it don't happen. But, yeah, I guess it's called the season of by election season. Brass Dax, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Hi.
Hi, Dennis Johnson. Well, I was away from work from March this year and sitting home listening to Brass Dax. I'm a first-time caller. Well, it was sad to hear that guy just no calling in with this political jargon, people defending parties, which is getting very sickening, you know, hearing these guys, tax man and tall boy and all these guys calling. But everybody have their own views on situations. But I agree with you 100%. When somebody made the views, let's just go along. You could state what you want to state, but basically that. But it goes on as though it's an argument and everybody trying to defend a party, whereas the ministers aren't defending themselves. But I call to say about one short thing about the banking in Barbados, the banking sector. As the guy said earlier, I believe that Barbadians, like, they're having all blinkers right now at this present moment, because I see a lot of things happening in the banking sector which Barbadians should be questioning. I see the Honorable Mayor Motley going abroad, lobbying for small nation states to get assistance, whereas they would be allowed to get money due to the fact of COVID and situations and lower interest rates on borrowing funds and stuff like that. But my grandmother always used to say, as a youngster coming up, you don't throw stones if you live in a glass house. I think the banking sector in Barbados needs to be fixed as well. It's okay to say what she's doing, because I could commend her on that, but the banking sector in Barbados is fraud. So much fees on the typical poor man, going around $5 here for keeping a account open every month, or no interest rates, all these things are going on. So how would it look as you going on the international arena, telling people how to conduct their business, but your home, your backyard isn't being fixed? That is just my take on the whole situation.
So, now brand new, yeah, the banking situation in Barbados in particular is something that I think needs to be addressed in a manner that satisfies the public. I'm not saying it hasn't been done, but I don't think the public is satisfied. That's the truth. I hear it all the time when I sit here.
I agree with you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But that's just my tip as a youngster growing up in this country. But I think we as Barbadians need to sit and look at ourselves of where we're going, where we want to go, because basically, it's just saying this DLP argument, then the BLP. I was hearing years ago when I was listening to this program, the DLP RFOs. Now I'm hearing, as I could say, BLP RFOs. No, as I agree, you 100%. I shouldn't get involved with this political stuff. Is who can better, who can help the country going forward. And to me, as a youngster coming up, I think Barbados lack a lot of visionaries, people who could take it to the next level. That's me as a youngster. But everybody will have their own take on stuff, but that's just my opinion.
Okay,
so,
sir.
You have a wonderful.
You too. Thank you very much. Brass Dax, good. Okay. WhatsApp message asked what's wrong with the lady. Said the first time hearing her. Can she get help from the health authorities? So that's a long, well, madam, I'm not sure which you are. It's a very long story. That person, I keep trying to let the WhatsAppers, especially those who have just recently joined the Brass Dax family, is that I've sat in this chair for a long, 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 long. And that particular lady has been a caller for over 10 years, I'm sure. And those issues have been aired in public for a long, long while. And I just think it's more punishing on her. And that's why I took the line I took. It is unfortunate. It really is unfortunate that in so many cases, people turn to this program for assistance when they can't find it anywhere else. Just mentioning a short while ago, the message that John gave me about the burst main in, or the water flowing in Black Rock. And there have been at least four messages about water flowing in other places. 93 Crescent Drive off Link Lane, Mullins Terrace, St. Peter, pouring for over 2 weeks. Royal Palm Tree at Upper Castle, St. Peter, started to split apart, and pictures of it that has been sent to Brass Tacks on at least four occasions that I can recall. Morning, Dennis. Can you inform the BWA of a burst main on the road leading to Ballantyne in St. David's Village? And so on and so on and so on. These organizations have help desks, emergency numbers, personnel who are supposed to be charged with communication. I got a WhatsApp message earlier on asking me if, as producer of the show, when someone calls with a complaint, for example, about a public transport bus, and I cut the caller, do I then send the information with the number to the authorities? I don't, unfortunately. I don't, because one, I do not have the numbers to the authorities at hand. And if I call them and they ask me where this occurred, what time did this occur, I can't tell them because the person did not give me that information. So we encourage people to pick up the phone and call the authorities and make a first-hand report. In a lot of cases, they don't. Sometimes the moderators ask the callers, have you called so-and-so-and-so? They hesitate, then they either say no, or sometimes they duck behind, I called but nobody answered. Our lack of confidence in what I called a couple days ago the watchdogs to guard us is alarming, because we're paying for these watchdogs. And if we have no trust in them, we have a problem. Someone sent a fairly lengthy message about something happening in the ZR and said the transport board needs to do something about it. Now, if that person thinks it's the transport board and they call the transport board, I'm sure the transport board would tell them, we do not regulate ZRs, it's a transport authority. And therefore, the person will feel that they're being shifted from one to the other and nobody's dealing with the problem. And again, it's because we don't know to whom to lodge the complaint. And that, too, is part of communication.